If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Podcast, a proud member of the Armchair All-Americans Network. This is Tom and Nick, and we are coming to you from the luxurious environs of our remote outpost in Delaware. We've been liberated from the teeming masses and oppressive heat of our home cities to join the annual family pilgrimage to the equally oppressively hot Rehoboth. But instead of sweltering in the daily grind in the bituminous coal mine, we come to you from the beach, where happy hour starts as soon as we turn the mic off, and we imbibe in our early afternoon margarita, replete with paper umbrellas, gazing from our screened-in porch, past the proletariat with the parade of their spoiled, rotten progeny, whose every whim is indulged as the parents sacrifice their own precious, fleeting few days of vacation, and fixing our eyes on the reflected glory of the undulating waves of the Atlantic Ocean. It is June 30th, 2019, and nice. We are really happy to be here.
That was good. And you're right. We are gazing upon the proletariat right behind us. This is scenic. This is our yearly trip to this same beach house that we usually frequent over here in Delaware. The only thing he didn't tell you guys is that it really is just a porch. There's a small room inside of the porch. There's no air conditioning in here. So there's a fan you guys are going to hear in the background during some of this podcast. We tried to get the sound as best as we could. But hey, we're in the same room. So that's an improvement on itself.
So I did have a lot of time to write that preamble this afternoon as I did lunch, so sorry about that. But we will have a special guest
we've been talking about
for a long time. It's been a long time since he's been here, but we have P. Butch in the house, part of the family, part of the caravan, and he will be coming in to talk in a few minutes as soon as, I guess, he comes off the beach.
Yeah, we got a wax poetic. He's a resident Jets fan. He's an NFL historian, certified, and he's the only other person who can relate to me in terms of his sickness for the NFL and what it can do to him. Although he's seen it safe on the other side now. You know, he got over it. He got out of the Jets game for a little bit. P. Butch did. But maybe Sam Darnold and Le'Veon Bell will draw him back in. I mean, granted, Le'Veon Bell would have to show up to training camp to draw any fans back in. But I guess he was there at the end now, and we'll see him back in there. So we'll get some of his opinions as a Jets fan on, you know, how he feels about Le'Veon Bell not attending some of those camps before. I'm going to be totally honest with you with that Le'Veon Bell thing. My opinion still stands of, like, it's just a douchey move. Like, it would be so easy for you to just go if, you know, it's your new team. If he were still on the Steelers, I would almost say, you know, going to this voluntary OTAs, it's not the worst thing or the best thing in the world. That's what we said about all the Steelers being there this year. It was nice that they were there, but, you know, Tom Brady wasn't at OTAs in the Patriots camp. No one's going to remember that by the time training camp comes around, and I think that's going to be the same for Lev, but we'll see what he thinks. Granted, he has some of our input.
I was doing some reading this afternoon just to figure out what we're going to talk about. Maybe you guys read this article or were aware of this, that Big Ben is just 25 sacks away from breaking the record currently held by Brett Favre.
The gunslinger.
Holding the most, has been sacked the most times in league history. So he's got like 501, he's been sacked 501 times.
So I don't think he's going to get it this year, maybe, because they've been holding Ben beneath 20 sacks for at least the past 2 years, if not three or four.
You're spot on. So I did some analysis. What I was really interested to see how many times he's been sacked
per pass attempt.
Yeah, and I know that's not perfect because he's probably been sacked on other times, but you know what? Of the top 20 quarterbacks in terms of sacks, most of whom, and I stripped out anybody who hasn't had at least 5,000 pass attempts, he's in the middle of the pack. He's sacked about 7% of the time when he dropped back in total over his career. And as you correctly pointed out, He's had he's been in sort of a low ebb on being sacked the last couple of years. Only 24 times last year, 21 years before that, and 17 in 2016.
What about 2015?
2015 is 20.
Yeah, so they've been...
the last bad, you know, call it bad year, was 2014 where he was sacked 33 times.
And he was on a bullet train to number one when you talk about the first 10 years of his career. I mean, especially during the run to the Super Bowl when they beat the Cardinals. What are you trying to show me here?
So I have a graph showing who was on the offensive line in the first Super Bowl in 2005. That was Heath, Marvell Smith, Alan Faneca, Hardings,
Kendall Simmons, Meg Starks. Yeah,
Starks.
That was a good offensive line. That was a very solid offensive line. And then when they beat the Cardinals in the Super Bowl and then went again against the Packers, you had Heath at tight end, Spaeth at backup tight end. You still had Starks, Chris Kiamatu, the human holding penalty himself, almost completely undermined the greatest game-winning drive in the history of the Super Bowl on the very first play. But really, if you think about it, he sort of contributed to the legend by backing Ben up further into his own end zone, so the trip to Super Bowl glory could be longer and more magnificent. So maybe we'll thank him. Justin Hartwig at center. Chris Stapleton. Current country superstar stinger actually moonlighted as a guard for the Steelmen at that time. And, of course, Willie Colon, one of the coolest personalities in sports. He works for Barstool now, by the way. I don't know if you've ever heard, but Willie's doing, like, podcasts and stuff. He's really? A cool dude. Yeah. He's another guy who comes out and defends Ben a lot, which is conveniently not mentioned by the media when it comes to his lineman buddies. I guess he gives the preferential treatment to some of those linemen. But what I was trying to say at first is, like, you remember the whole, like, early parts of his career, the theme was this guy isn't going to be able to play 10 years. He just takes too many hits. Not only was the offensive line play atrocious after that first Super Bowl win, but he tried to take more. He took more risks. You remember that? Like, he was the ultimate, no. Yes, player ever. And we used to say, like, Ben needs to get rid of the ball quicker. And that was, like, this constant debate with Pittsburgh fans. Does he need to get rid of the ball quicker, or is that what makes him Ben? Is that what gives you all the great plays, is all the time he hangs onto the ball? And that was such a narrative through the first half of his career. And I think people hang on to career narratives that are even outdated, because another one of the narratives about Ben Roethlisberger was that he just couldn't be tackled. He's just basically a big oaf, a big dummy back there who can't get brought back down to the ground. And that always pisses me off, because I think of Ben sort of like Jerome Bettis, where it's like, that body type does not look right for that position. But both of them, so fleet of foot. The footwork, Ben's always been very smooth. And then so sometimes people talk about that as where his career is at now. But like we saw, Todd Haley, give him credit, he helped transition Ben into being more of a timing passer. He still does some of the Cowboy stuff, but it's been mitigated. And then the draft picks and acquiring Mike Munchak basically let the Steelers establish this awesome offensive line. And the second half of his career has been totally different from what it looked like was going to be, you know, a wheelchair destiny based on the first half of his career.
Yeah, happily he did evolve. But I think the word you used was smooth, and I think that was appropriate, because Ben didn't appear quick. It's just elusive. Slowly elusive. Somehow he just made a subtle yeah. move and avoid being hit. It's kind of a thing to behold by a guy that big and, yeah. you know, frankly slow.
And yeah, he threw off Terrell Suggs when Terrell Suggs tried to tackle him before. So of course, the big thing about him is he does... I guess the difference is more like, it's not that he's punching people into the ground. It's that he doesn't go down with the same type of hits that other quarterbacks go down with. And that used to be that same stupid pregame sort of hack move by the announcers every time you'd see them play. Like, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, you got to make sure you tackle him with two arms. Troy Polamalu, you always have to know where he is on the field every week. For 10 years with those guys. Those were the narratives. But it's just wild to see that. I sort of lost track of Ben on the all-time sack list because it's been so great for the past few years. But he really made the most out of it in the beginning of his career when it was like him and David Carr setting records back and forth for most sacked in a season or whatever it is.
Well, I thought it was just interesting. I won't rattle off too many numbers here. But I looked at the top 20 quarterbacks in terms of sacks – So Ben is definitely in the middle of the pack. They average about 7% of attempts they're sacked on. At the bottom, I already told you this earlier while we were on the beach.
Right, oh, yeah, but we need to tell the good people now.
Drew Brees, 4% of. So if you just want to get a perspective, order of magnitude, Drew Brees at 4%. Coming in second is Tom Brady at 5%. And third is Brett Favre at 5.2%. At the top of the scale, this is interesting. So third from the bottom, Archie Manning, 10.9%, who last played in 1984. Followed by Phil Sims, your buddy's dad.
Woo!
At 10.3, and Randall Cunningham, I would have never, 11.3. He was hit quite a bit.
You need to watch Randall Cunningham highlights, by the way. There are some guys, I was tweeting back and forth with this. Oh, I'll bring up the tweet so we can reference it later. But I was talking back and forth with someone on Twitter the other day about Barry Sanders highlights because they're absurd. And if you watch them, you know sometimes when you watch like the old highlights of players, but they don't totally translate to now. Like, it's like their shoulder pads fit too big. They run upright. Even when you watch Stallworth, you're like, man, he would get laid out now. Like, these guys, you know, Julian Edelman's out there taking steroids. And the athletes have gotten bigger, faster, and stronger. So sometimes you see highlights from guys from previous eras who were amazing, but the training wasn't the same. So you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. Like, yeah, I mean, at the time compared to his peers, he was beast, but you couldn't put him in a time machine and have him succeed now. Barry Sanders, not the case. He would be the identical running back now as he was back then. And we still have not seen anybody who's even remotely that elusive. You get so used to hearing Barry's name, just like, oh yeah, Barry Sanders is elusive. Watch the highlights. It's like better than Reggie Bush at USC highlights.
I did watch the highlights, and you just watch his knees. As he does his cut. He does that head fake, but his knee, he like almost genuflex left and then breaks right just in a flash. It was amazing.
So we were talking about him, talking about Barry Sanders. I was referencing Randall Cunningham. He's another one. Oh my gosh. He was like a lizard back there. He was like a lizard on fire. The dude was bending, twisting, topsing, turning all over the place, and he was a real scrambler, and it would totally translate to today's game as well, which is cool. It's wild. Thaddeus Snow, shout out, at Thaddeus Snow. We were talking about the Barry Sanders highlights. Thaddeus said he's the only guy I've seen, more than once, get a guy turned around, then lose him completely because he flips back the other way. Ridiculous. Yeah, that was Barry. Randall Cunningham's another one. Kind of a forgotten name in the quarterback conversation because he didn't win a Super Bowl, I guess. On like an awkward eighth grade date sort of situation where you like go with two guys and two girls and the two guys inevitably end up at the poppin' shot station.
Of course.
But it wasn't a poppin' shot. It was actually a giant version of that. So they basically had a big basketball hoop and a rubber crappy ball and you try and make it. Not rocket science. And they had all these old, very random NFL jerseys up as the prizes. Jerseys that only could be at like a carnival, and that's how I won my Randall Cunningham NFC Pro
that's
Bowl
where that
jersey.
Came from?
Was it Eagles or Vikings?
I don't know because it was a Pro Bowl jersey, and I don't know what year it was from, but it was a number 12, and it was the blue jersey.
You gotta love it when you're 14. You think women will love me if I score the most basketball.
Oh yes, yeah. Granted, they were over getting funnel cake and didn't see my glory there, but I digress. So I think that this sack conversation is kind of a good way to segue into two topics. A Ben Roethlisberger topic, kind of more big picture, and then tie this a little bit back into the Chris Sims top 40 quarterback list that we defended him on last week. So I don't know, Pat, you know, obviously you were paying attention to the NFL at the time. I was telling my dad earlier that in Ben's first 6 or 7 years of his career, it was like this foregone conclusion that, yeah, this guy's going to be in the league for 10, 11 years because his body's going to break down.
Yeah. I'll just remember going back to that 2009 Super Bowl that you won.
Yeah.
I think for me, the one play in the Super Bowl that's probably symbolized their line was a Darnell Dockett shooting through the middle and sacking Ben early on your last drive, right?
Not on the last drive. They all shot through and he evaded them. on the last drive.
Okay. Well,
but that did happen.
And I can't think of the last quarterback to win a Super Bowl with one of the worst offensive lines in the league. Because Russell has one now.
Right.
But he didn't when he won a Super Bowl. Went to a Super Bowl. You know, you look at, you know, Tom Brady has had one of the best offensive lines in the league since he's entered into the league.
Yeah.
Like, I see it every single time we play them. Like, you just cannot touch him.
Yeah.
And so it's a big differentiator between the guys who can win without a line and the guys who need a line to win. And you look at the Jets when they went to two straight AFC championships. Mark Sanchez isn't a good quarterback. You know why he was able to put up decent numbers? He had one of the best offensive lines in the league. So to be able to do it without an offensive line shows how, you know, valuable you are as a quarterback.
And the last drive in that Cardinals Super Bowl really shows that, because he completes a pass on the first play of that game-winning drive. And of course, as we should have been conditioned to expect throughout the course of that year, there's a holding penalty immediately. And he goes back and almost dips back into his own end zone, and two guys shoot through. They're going to safety him, and he ducks in between them, and it's Antonio Holmes, and then we're kind of off to the races after that. And that was just the perfect microcosm for how that whole season worked. But is Tom Brady going to do that? No. There's other things that Tom Brady's going to do that Ben can't do, of course, like in just terms of constantly making the right decision, or maybe, I mean, that's basically it. Kissing his son on the mouth. I mean, he's going to be way better at that.
My thing is, like, I always put Manning ahead of Brady because I know Manning can do it without an offensive line. I know Manning can do it in different places outside of a certain coach's system, whereas as all those guys in the top of Sims's ranking can. Aaron Rodgers can do it by himself.
We've seen it.
Russell Wilson by himself. Patrick Mahomes, Greek God, by himself. Roethlisberger by himself.
Andrew Luck.
Never been able to see Brady do it by himself. You go back and you watch the Super Bowl. Very rarely touched. Aaron Donald couldn't get to him.
Yeah, that's the thing. And part of that's because Dante Scarnecchia, who is their offensive line coach. What are you looking? Is there a photo shoot going on here?
It's a photo shoot for the Instagram page.
You guys, this is a family podcast, and my mom is so touched that we're all doing a podcast together that she's taking pictures, and I guess she wanted us to look at the camera, but I think she wanted a candid, so we'll just keep trashing Tom Brady and loving each other. Granted, we got Jets and Steelers fans here, but honestly, what you just said about the top of that Sims list is why I think people need to be more open-minded to why he ranked those particular players high. So he put Rodgers first over Mahomes. He said they're basically 1A, 1B. You could put either one which way. The reason why he put Rodgers at number one is just because of the experience factor is there. Then people want to be like, oh, he sucked last year. And I'm sure that most people here can't name their next receiver after Davante Adams. He's not even that great of a receiver. Who's on the line? Who's their running back? Who's on their defense? I'm pretty sure if he had Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Andy Reid, Kareem Hunt,
or
Sammy Watkins.
Put him on the Patriots from 2001 to 2019, how many Super Bowls would he have? You know, and that's – I've said, and I'll say it in class when I'm teaching the boys, especially if I'm a Patriots fan in the audience, I think – Tom Brady's one of the most overrated quarterbacks of all time. And then, you know,
their audience is
going
to love you.
Yeah. And I give my reasons and I go through the list and I'm just like, let me see you do it without Belichick.
Right.
And he's very good. He's very one of the best. In fact, if there are 2 minutes left in a game, it's a Super Bowl. There's probably no one else I'd want other than Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah.
But to me, give me the guys who don't need a coach, don't need a line. Can literally put their team on their back and do it on their own.
Right, so we've had this discussion for 2 decades now, and we'll keep having it for the rest of our decades. But I think I hold Brady in a little bit of a higher esteem just from the fact Pat's picking up his phone and leaving.
Belgium right now.
Leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah, those don't usually end well. I would screen that. But my thing with Brady is I agree with you on terms of overrated only in the sense of I think it's ridiculous when people just say he's the de facto number one quarterback of all time and there's no discussion. I mean, I get it because he did an amazing job holding the Rams to 3 points in the Super Bowl. You have to give him credit for the defensive game plan he drew up to hold the Rams. I mean, he went out there and he scored 13 points. I mean, it was amazing.
You sent me a video of some guy being like, watch this 5-yard out route by Rady. Oh my God.
Nailed it. Nailed it. Yeah, exactly. There's a great video of that. But people, this is why I got angry on last week of the podcast. People get furious when you say that. He's Tom Brady. He has 5 Super Bowls. So are we attributing all of those to him? He had 90 yards passing. This became like a Tom Brady podcast. But this is what June and July are for.
Yeah.
When you're talking about football podcasts. Because this is interesting stuff. And I got legitimately pissed off about all the hate Chris Sims is getting on his quarterback list. Because he gave his quarterback list. And whether you agree with where the people are at or not. And I generally agree with all of them. I do think Tom Brady should have been a few steps higher, because he still has elite arm talent. He just showed a video on Instagram where he threw the ball 61 miles per hour on the radar gun, which is as fast as Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes did it at their combine.
Give it a rest, buddy. Like, this is my thing with him.
Go
is
away!
Like, just do your job and be quiet, you know?
Yeah, but he finds these ways to motivate himself. But regardless, my greater point about this like quarterback list is, when you say anything bad about Brady, people just say, he's Brady. He's Brady. Clearly, people who don't even watch 16 games a year, this or that. When Chris Sims, he goes through his quarterback list, and he gives you specific examples. He gives you games. He gives you plays. He gives you reasons. Like the fact that Drew Brees, when they need to throw deep for the second half of the season, they bring Taysom Hill into the game because Drew Brees can't throw far enough. Taysom Hill threw a freaking interception to Sean Davis in the Steelers game. And listen, everybody out there getting mad at me for talking crap about Sean Davis, I'm just teasing. I was very proud when he made that interception. It was a tremendous underthrow by Taysom Hill. But these things that people just forget the context of. And if you want to say Brady's better than Cam Newton or Ben or Ryan, let's talk about it. Give me an example. Show me. Tell me what's up. Oh, he won the Super Bowl. He was horrible in the Super Bowl. That's not a good argument. Give me a different argument.
I would put money on the line that if Brady was on the Steelers 2019, they would not have won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and maybe there are other Steelers teams, if he were on in the past 4 years, where we would have won. Because, you know, maybe he made the right decisions, right?
Yeah.
But in 2009, no way. That's not his skill set.
Right.
And I do think that there's something interesting to be said when we're talking about this overall conversation about QBs and sacks and everything. When you watch, you know, I probably watch about 8 Seahawks games a year because my girlfriend's a big Seahawks fan in addition to the Steelmen. So I get to watch Russell Wilson play. And their whole offense is just, it's Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. It's just Russell Wilson doing spins and backflips and throwing.
Watch it.
Yeah, it's perfection. It's marching music. Right. But it's like, it's unbelievable that they score touchdowns on a consistent basis, and it's just because of the brilliance of that player. And they have a notoriously middle school level system, so you can imagine if they had a better system that this guy would be even better when you're talking about a Russell Wilson, even a Patrick Mahomes or something like that. So I'm kind of conflating like different topics here at the same time.
I always find a way to bring it back to how much I hate Tom Brady.
Yeah, it's a good... We're going to get sued for that. We don't have a license.
Sorry. I was just got a phone call. It was my
ringtone. Thank you, Bee Gees, for that great song. But I do like... I lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
Imagine that.
I was trying to contribute in some way to this conversation, but you guys have a memory of a bad ex-girlfriend.
Not good. Well, yeah. Well, like we have how bad ex-girlfriends leave scars that run deep, so do opposing quarterbacks for teams that have been in your division.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of scars, Pat, the long-suffering Jets fan, which is redundant, I understand that. You have Le'Veon Bell on the team. What's the perspective of your hometown fans?
It's tough. So I remember talking to Nick a few years ago, and I was saying, who's the most valuable player in your offense?
Mm-hmm.
And you said Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, at the time, this was 2015, 2016.
And I was like, I mean, surely not. Obviously, it's Ben. If he goes down, your offense changes dramatically. And then I had to realize how great AB was until later.
Right.
With that being said, I think like a quarterback's best friend are like those slot receivers, those tight ends, and a running back. A running back can do it all. And so Le'Veon Bell will be a massive help to Darnold. I think no question about it. I don't think anyone's questioning that.
Right.
But, you know, when you see stuff, the thing that bothered me is like, for when it's so clear that it's all about the money.
Yeah.
and nothing else. And I get he's competitive and he's probably training his butt off. They say he trains in a top rate way. And like he can only get that if he's doing it on his own. But, try and be a good teammate. That may be just as important as going out there and putting your work on your own. So I'm excited for what he can bring to Darnold, but you just wish that you're making $14 million. They're paying you a lot of money after you said you would never be a Jet.
Yeah.
On that Instagram post or Twitter. I don't know exactly what he said. So, like, and give some sort of indication to the public that you are happy to be here. You're here for a reason outside of the $14
million. Yeah.
Just like the owners. Yeah. They passed for a bad year.
Yeah, pretty much. Because with Bell, here's the thing is, it is true that he will get better physical training with a personal trainer outside of NFL practices.
Yeah.
Because the NFL is actually randomly still a little bit outdated from what I've heard on some of their training. It's like they get you into the building and they have linemen doing the same drills as receivers.
Right.
They're not even the same species or genus or phylum. Or class, for that matter. But, dude, like a week to show up to OTAs isn't going to ruin your training for the whole year. So that's the thing. I guess just watching it, experience a little schadenfreude over there.
I got to challenge that. You are on your way to, what, a 4.5-minute mile?
Well,
And we're on vacation. We should be sloth-like. We should be eating cheese doodles. And we did start happy hour before the mic dropped. And you are worried about losing a week's worth of time.
Okay. That is actually a good comparison because I do remember when I got to the 5-minute. I'm just trying to
That's so individual though too.
Right.
Like, you're not part of a team.
And he has months to get back into it. Exactly. Right. I guess what he's referencing is when I was going for that 5-minute mile and I'm only doing these things just for a last gasp of athletic prove it to myself before I turn, get towards 30 or whatever. But I was telling him, my dad, when I was going for the 5-minute mile, I got it. And then the day after, we left and went on a tour with the band for like a week and a half. And then I came back and I didn't lose like 5 or 10 seconds. I lost, I tumbled back down and it took me a long. So I was so surprised that it all got crushed that quickly. And so I buy what you're saying about Le'Veon Bell there. But the difference is he's not going. He had months to get back into shape, and he has such an issue with his public persona from, sitting out with the Steelers, whether that's right or not, because I think that people are wrong to criticize him for sitting out for the Steelers. He's exercising the only right he had. They wanted to franchise tag him. He's obviously far outperformed that contract with the Steelers. I was sad to see it. But that was his right. He just acted like a bit of a douchebag during the process with tweeting the eyeballs after week one when we tied to the Browns making comments and then going out when he signed with the Jets and making the comments about Ben Roethlisberger to ESPN, which sort of seemed like, oh, I'm just capitalizing on this thing that AB just did. So now people think I'm a better guy.
I just think that's a different thing than is he alienating himself from his new team. And I do think these guys all know it's about the money and it's about the business. Right. I'm sure when he comes in, I bet you it's open arms.
Baker, so...
Oh, yeah.
A few things. Well, with regards to that, I know Baker just called out Duke Johnson, right? And then Baker got reeled in by his teammates. But hey, this is a business. This is not college anymore. Like, people got to watch out for themselves. You can't be going out saying you're with us or you're against us. So that is true. One thing I wonder, though, is I have heard that Le'Veon Bell is a good teammate.
Yeah, everyone likes him.
Everyone likes him, which is funny because of what's going on now.
Yeah.
I remember back when Sanchez, his first few years as a quarterback for the Jets, he, in trying to exhibit leadership at a young age, hosted his own little camp with the receivers to try and get to know the guys and build some chemistry. And he flew them out to Southern California, and they they just got a feel for each other. And I wonder if Bell would do that, or if he'd be like, no, I'm cool. I'm going to sit this out.
Maybe when he's younger, but I don't know about now. Yeah. And I think he feels like he has been unfairly targeted, like I've said. Even when he was thinking about sitting out for the Steelers, I said painfully on the podcast, he should definitely do it.
Right.
Because, and our stance was that, if you're a free agent after the end of this end of that year, there's going to be a Browns or a Dolphins or a Raiders who are going to pay you even more than what the Steelers want to pay you. Funny thing is, it didn't end up happening. Yeah. But hey, go figure. But it just would be such an easy. So some of the hate he's gotten has been undeserved, honestly, and people not understanding the nuance of football and be like, he's rich, he shouldn't, you know, why would you sit out? Rather than think like these aren't your taxes that they're paying him with. People are going to games and buying jerseys. He's earning this money based on the profession he plays, and he deserves to be able to make more. He's being held hostage because of a stupid CBA that lets teams hold people hostage for one year. So I get that. But then he just acted like a douche after with the tweeting and the interviews and the world's against me. And I think that that's now his mentality. He thinks like, everyone's against me, so I'm just going to be this guy who's out for myself.
What I'm interested to see is, I think he's going to have a clear impact.
Oh, yeah.
Because of his receiving ability. Because here's what's going to be interesting to me is, our offensive line is one of the bottom two-thirds offensive lines in the NFL, going to what we were just talking about. We have a bad offensive line, which is not good.
Yeah.
Darnold can get the ball quickly, which is great. You know, people like Peyton Manning, who doesn't have the mobility and to be like a rock in the pocket like Roethlisberger,
right,
would get out just through delivering the ball out quickly and easy reads. That's how Darnold's going to have to get around it, and through Tony Romo like scrambling.
Yeah.
As a runner, though, it's kind of hard to get around a bad offensive line unless you're Barry Sanders or Saquon Barkley. Le'Veon Bell is not either one of those guys. Unique running style, but not one of those guys. So I think it'll be interesting to see how he does in New York if the fans turn on him because of this sort of what he's doing now and skipping these voluntary workouts. Right. If he's not putting up yardage. I think he's going to do it out of the backfield in terms of the pass receiving threat. And so that's going to help him. But I think he's going to struggle at first. I remember reading somebody from the Steelers, maybe a coach, saying they're going to have to get used to how he runs, his running style. The linemen are going to have to continue their blocks.
Right.
And so that's something I'm looking out for. Is the media and the fans going to turn on him if he's not putting up the yardage because he's not putting the goodwill now?
And that's his fault a little bit. And that's where I would have kind of fought him. Like, dude, you would have been beloved if you just came to that training camp. Now, here's my thing, what I think is going to happen. He's going to get into training camp and people are going to be like, oh my God, we haven't had an offensive player like this in forever because he's amazing. So,
well, what are his prospects? What do you bet he's going to, how many yards this year?
Well, I don't know how many yards he's going to get, but if I were to bet on how many yards, I would do it at my bookie because my bookie offers bettors in all major markets an entertaining lineup of gaming options. You can take prop bets. Who's going to get more all-purpose yards this year? James Conner or Le'Veon Bell? Maybe probably Le'Veon because they need to make it seem like the investment was worth it. But James Conner's got it going on and he's younger. And either way, you can make that bet on myboogie.ag. They got a great mobile site that's easy to use with a sleek design that offers for easy navigation. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. You play, you win, you get paid.
So we took our hard bodies at the beach this afternoon. We were tossing the ball around a little bit. We were talking about the podcast. And one of the things we had talked about last week was the new pass interference rule.
Right.
And Pat, you extended that conversation a little bit, and you asked, well, I guess we could talk about that again just to get Pat's perspective.
Yeah.
But you posed a very interesting question that I think we should take on.
Well,
here,
before you say that, let's just get it straight for everybody out there. I don't know if it's official, but if it's not official, it's about to be a one-year trial basis. I think the rule is pretty much pass interference is reviewable now. I don't think the coaches can challenge it, but the video official on site deems, if he deems a play really during any point of the game as reviewable, he calls Dean Blandino. Is that the guy? He calls the head of the guy who really should not be in the job he's working in the NFL office and tells this guy to take a look at it. I have his name written down here in my notes somewhere because you got to take notes sometimes. But Al Riveron. So basically, if you see a fishy call during a game, the replay official at the game calls Al Riveron in New York, who has not demonstrated the knowledge necessary to be able to differentiate between these things, because he actually gave a presentation in the offseason saying, like, obviously, here's the play with the Saints and the Rams. We know this is a pass interference. Then he showed a play with the Chargers and the Chiefs, which was just like more ticky-tack, and he said, obviously, this will be called pass interference.
Right.
And we're thinking, oh my God. And then he shows the play in the Super Bowl where Brandon Cooks dropped that go route into the right side of the end zone from Jared Goff, who miraculously threw it within the general vicinity of him. And Stephon Gilmore actually got there and touched Cook's arm before the ball came down. So, like, by the letter of the law, it'd be pass interference when you slowed it down. But if you really watch it, Cooks was able to get his arms back up and get both hands on it. And Riveron, I think, talked about that, too, saying, like, that's pass interference. So, basically, Pandora's box is opened.
Could they flip it, though? Because there's a lot of defensive pass interference all the time. But there's also offensive receivers pushing off. And can you actually review a play on the opposite side and say, hi, I think this wide receiver, I think AB pushed off.
He probably did.
To go get this ball. Ooh. Right. Is that a part of the new rule?
I think it is, but that's almost makes it even worse for me, because for me, I think that you had a play with the Saints-Rams that's like a once in every 10 years situation. It sucked. It was objectively the wrong call, just like Joe Hayden pass interference on Alvin Kamara when the Steelers played them was objectively the wrong call, right? And albeit in a smaller spotlight. And that happened, and it sucks, and it's going to happen. But now you're going to create 100 more of these, because it's like the old saying, there's holding on every play, there's pass interference on every play, and you're going to slow down a game that's already slowed down. And when you put things, I think they do have to watch it in full speed instead of slow motion, but I think you're opening a Pandora's box.
Gentlemen, if we're not careful, we're going to be watching girls lacrosse in the NFL. I'm not sure if everybody in America, whether lacrosse has come to your area or not, but... And boy, I'm going to get in trouble for this. But
keep
girls
an eye
lacrosse,
out for Kate Taylor, number 21, Boston College, killing it.
You can't She's get killing. In the way. So my girlfriend in college with girls lacrosse. You at D1, so I went to all the games. Girls lacrosse, you can't even – it's almost even harder. You can't even get in the way of the offensive players, a defender or something.
Right.
Like it's just incredibly hard to play defense. But what UT was getting at
It wasn't a sexist remark about girls lacrosse. No. It was exactly what he's saying right there. What you're saying, it's like, it's almost harder to, the rule is no contact, straight up. But that would be too hard to switch to that in the NFL based on how the game's played.
Yeah, that was really egregious, that call, I think. And, given what was at stake and a Super Bowl appearance.
I mean, granted, it was a horrible throw, and then he threw an interception on the drive from the
ball. Right. But, you ignore all those.
Well, he's Drew Brees, yeah, so we do ignore all the other factors.
No, you just look at it in a vacuum. Jared Goff could have thrown it, and Sam Darnold. It was a horrible call.
Yes.
And I think, one, feel bad for the Saints fans who had to suffer through 2 years in a row of heartbreaking losses.
Yes.
But
that's horrible.
So, they're doing it for a year. I'm not as against it just because it's a one-year trial run. And I assume that you can only challenge it with one of your two challenges.
No, the coaches don't have power. It's deemed by a video.
Yeah, so then never mind. Fishing. That's bad.
Mike Florio had a good suggestion. It's basically like a break glass in case of emergency rule to address exactly what you're saying, to save the Saints fans from certain rioting for horrible, which is basically like just get a sky judge at every game. And for only something like that, don't send it back to New York. Just review something if it's like crazy egregious like that, where everybody, I think he phrased it like where 100 fans, no, 500, no, 2,000 fans in a bar should be able to point out this was a horrible miss. Not like, I remember watching the playoffs.
That would be fun, right? If you had that, you're like, the NFL's going to grab 2,000 random fans, put them in a bar.
Get them drunk.
And they'll be exactly right.
And if it registers with them,
that would be a fun rule. Yeah.
Okay, now
the
we're getting somewhere.
The sky judges, you're going to have to hire one more guy, $200,000 a year in the weather. 14 games a weekend, $2.8 million come out of the NFL coffers. I think they're going to be grudgingly.
Yeah, that's tough.
Hold on, we have another pause for our second sponsor.
The sweet nectar of please sponsor us.
This is called
beer.
Stone Ripper. They're not giving us anything.
It looks awesome. It's great branding, but there's a freebie for you, Stone Ripper. I know you're listening, so why don't you hook us up with a little case and we'll give you a little something more. The play in the Super Bowl. The throw to Brandon Cooks on the go route where he was covered, I don't know if it was Pat Chung and some stupid Patriots defenders. Let's be honest. We don't care. But no, it was Stephon Gilmore and another guy who Stephon Gilmore is the guy who made contact. And I remember vividly seeing that play in the Super Bowl and first just doubling down on my opinion of Brandon Cooks being like the lowest end number one wide receiver you can have. Like,
is he even a number one?
It's an interesting conversation. High-end
number two, but anyways.
Yeah, no, I think that there's a great argument for that because it was just I saw the contact before it happened, but I just didn't deem it enough to be like pass interference. And even if it was the Steelers, I would yell for like I want to win the Super Bowl. Let's get that call. But I was obviously rooting for the Rams in that Super Bowl because the Patriots are playing in it, and I wasn't even mad. I was like, I'm glad they didn't call that ticky tack. Antonio Brown would have caught that.
Right.
DeAndre Hopkins would have caught that. And I'm worried about there's going to be a lot of plays like that because Al Riveron has even referenced plays like that. And now we're going to be in really ticky-tackville and you're going to turn into the NBA last 5 minutes of the game. You might as well not tune into the rest of the game because the last 5 minutes are an hour, you know?
I don't know. We'll see. It better not slow it down. The NFL is in like this weird spot, I feel. I think they've been losing viewers. At one point, they were, I know, 2 years ago or a few years ago.
Right, with the Kaepernick stuff, but I think that...
You had a lot of stuff. You know, the game is, you'd say you're slowing down. You also
it was more entertainment out there, honestly.
What UT was getting at with the comment earlier, it's just when you take away the physicality of it, like when certain hits that were you didn't used to be... Like when you get nailed for...
When Juju crushes Vontaze Burfict's soul out of his body, and there's
when it's a really good hit,
yeah.
And if you're these guys are so athletic and so fast. This is a point that's been made over and over again. And you're running a 4.3 to go hit a guy who's also running a 4.3. Yeah. How are you supposed to change your body to avoid hitting right in the head?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, that's some stuff where they lose me a little bit. And this does add to that.
You've already screwed the defenders over so thoroughly, particularly the cornerbacks and the safeties. And I like what you were saying earlier about, hey, maybe this will cause some offensive pass interferences. But we all know that... It's going to be like one out of every 10. They'll be the offensive pass interference.
What gets me, it just would really, and this again is somebody who's had to watch Brady who barely gets hit. And when he does, he complains like he's some sort of soccer player who just got like a breath of somebody's air was blown in his shin and now he's down. And
it's distracting.
Like, I just want to see the defenses to start getting a little bit more love. And I want to see guys be able to come through the middle and smack a quarterback. You know, back in the day, I feel like Brett Favre liked to get hit hard.
Andrew Luck does. He thanks
Andrew them. Luck does. Yes. I think that's awesome.
And then
that's
he had to sit out a year of football.
That's a part of football. A part of football should be Tom Brady sitting back, not getting touched and getting soft.
Right, 7-on-7.
Roughing the passer. Tony's, you know.
Like in the championship game, one he got.
Exactly right.
I'm with as much... if they can control some of that and take away some of the concussion issues and the major injury problems, if it's within the realm of possibility, I'm for it because I want the game to continue to grow and some stuff might be needlessly violent. And that's weird coming from someone who played football and was there doing Oklahoma's for hours legitimately in training camp every day. So believe me, I'm there and I'm with it. And honestly, those days did a lot for my life as a human being and learning lessons and how to kind of work through something. But... you know, football, less parents are letting their kids play. So if we can do things to reduce some of that violence that aren't a physically impossible ask, I'm fine with that. But when you're asking for things that are physically impossible, like the corner, do not touch the receiver at all, but cover him. That's not possible. Like what you were just saying, okay, 2-4-3 guys are running at each other in the greatest athletes that the world has ever seen.
Yes.
And they're going to collide, and the receiver catches it because the ball is thrown slightly behind him, so then his head moves at the last second, and the cornerback was aiming at his chest, but now the head has moved at the last fraction of a second. Like, you can't ask that of somebody.
Yeah.
So you need to draw the line there somewhere.
You can make the change. I mean, you can narrow the field. I mean, this is step one. I was just reading my book, which I'm going to quote from you. The NFL narrowed the hash marks intentionally to open up the game to passing in the early 70s. I mean, there are things you could do if you really wanted to.
Right.
I don't think... I agree with you that They can't change things that aren't physically possible, but they can change the dimensions of the field. They change the rules with regularity. And in this case, I think this is just, I agree with you, Nick, this is just a knee-jerk reaction that's going to be impossible to adjudicate. Which is the critical pass? You're pointing to a critical playoff game.
Right.
But every game, people are mental about. So if there's any kind of, not even egregious, like Pat, you were saying, every play there's pass interference. So who's to say whether that's significant or not?
Can you name another one that's as bad as that? Either tuck rule is the only other one that comes to my mind. Like, this was the worst one that we've seen, and it was horrible, and the Saints got hosed.
No, the Saints got hosed,
and he did throw an interception after. But they got screwed. I mean, but you know what the funny thing is, dude?
Just for the record, I don't hate Drew Brees as much as others, but...
I adore Drew Brees growing up because he was the only other 5'11 quarterback that I could look up to, and
now
I
you
still...
Have Russ.
No, and now we have Russ and this other guy for Cleveland, and now a dude in Arizona, so they're all over the place, but... My thing with Drew Brees is I still love Drew Brees. I just find it disgusting how he is in that sentence of Roger, you know, Rogers, Brady, Brees, when I just do not think that he is that much better than Ben Roethlisberger. If you want to say he's better, then we can split the hairs there, but it annoys me that he gets placed with the Brady and the Rogers and
just
Roethlisberger's kick to the curb.
That was it.
That's a quick aside.
Brees is paying me to say stuff like that. He's
Drew Brees is a human angel. He's a saint. We had a lot. I went to school in New Orleans for their first. I celebrated with everybody for their first Super Bowl. There are stories of a lot of my friends who see Drew Brees in public, and he'll chat it up with them. And like, he's a cool guy. Yeah. You gotta love Drew. I just don't like the public propping him up on this pedestal that maybe Brady and Rodgers deserve more than Brees and Ben. But Ben should be right there with them, and it's appalling that people.
So, Pat, you suggested that during the podcast we all offer what rule change we would like to see if we get the chance to try it out for a year.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Here's a new one that comes out that's quite controversial. And obviously here we have people very opinionated. And I was just curious if you could change, Nick and John, one rule, what would it be? If you could say, guys... Actually, I'm Nick Serena. I don't know if you know me. We're not going to do the pass interference thing. I got another rule, and here's what it's going to be. It is going to be...
Another rule. Okay, we talked about this briefly. I didn't have any time to really prepare anything, so maybe I'll regret saying this. But the first one I sort of think about off the top of my head is that Juju hit on Perfect, and I don't like that the crackback blocks are illegal. I sort of think that's fair game. I think that that's part of your responsibility as a linebacker is to keep your head up and figure out where you're going. And if Juju wants to come back and make that crackback block on Perfect, you're almost putting him in danger if you don't let Juju hit hard. Like, what is he supposed to go do? Like, set a basketball pick in front of Vontae's Perfect? Like, he's just supposed to lay his body out in front of a man who can kill people with his hands? Like, you're almost endangering the wide receiver. So maybe I'll regret this, seeing as I just went on a...
tirade?
Yeah, I was going to say tirade, but that's a little strong. I just made a point about removing the violent aspects of the game if you can, but I think that that changes... I think that that one's kind of... Like, just keep your head up, Fontes.
Part of me... Yeah, I think... I don't know. The violence is part of the game. It's like taking boxing and be like, you know what? No more punching. Here's two guys start hitting each other. Be a different sport. That's part of the game. You know, like, and it's something when you step into boxing, you step into football, you, I think, are aware of the consequences potentially. And this is a whole other topic. It's controversial, I think.
Right.
If you told someone you...
We're looking for listeners here, so keep going. Controversial.
Are you sure? Yeah. But if you told somebody... it's your choice. You can make $50 million a year, but you might have lifelong brain damage. How many people would say yes? I might.
I'll say yes.
I'm not that bright anyway.
Yeah, exactly right.
There's not a lot to lose. It's a slow fall. And you know what? Your point is like there's a consequence. There's a physical consequence. So it's not just about what happens on that play. It's about how you strategize. And quarterbacks and offensive coordinators know that now you can throw over the middle constantly because you're not going to get your receivers laid out like you used to, which they used to have to worry about.
Yeah.
You felt bad if you got your receivers laid out. And you also know you can do longer developing pass plays because the threat of the quarterback getting hurt is lower rather than when Terry Bradshaw was playing. I mean, you remember the Dallas Cowboys, one dude picked him up and the other one ripped the football out of his hands and the original guy threw Terry on the ground. Like, there was real, I mean, the things Joe Green did to other quarterbacks, you know, you were risking that every time you faded back to pass. So you had to do other things to move the ball down the field. So it's almost the threat of the consequence sometimes that makes a difference.
It for me, it's a whole, I don't know if I could choose one. Overall, I don't like how defenses are being they're penalized. They're fighting with one hand behind their back. I don't like how a holding call is 5 yards and a first down, which arose, by the way, out of Peyton Manning
complaining about the Patriots and the championship. Exactly,
the Patriots roughing up his team in the championship game. I don't like how an offensive pass interference is a spot penalty, defensive pass interference is a spot penalty. But an offensive pass interference is only 10 yards.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, that's not
incongruent.
Exactly right. It's not equitable. And so, I don't know. I have to think on that.
Maybe fixing some of the. No, I like that though. That's a thinking point. Did you have one?
This isn't exactly a rule change. This is a change in the game. I would eliminate the kickoff, start everybody at the 20.
I'm with that.
And the other thing is, I said this afternoon I'd eliminate the extra point. I wouldn't let the extra point. I would let 2-point conversion or drop kick. Old school.
Why would you eliminate the kickoff? And the only reason I ask is as a fan, some of my most, like, I remember when Brad Smith in 2010, we were in Pittsburgh. I was in a bar in New York, and Brad Smith, it was snowing. It was the year you ended up beating us in the AFC Championship.
I think had a kickoff return for a touchdown.
I just was talking to Nick earlier about it. I remember Chad Morton having 2 kickoff returns for touchdowns. They're very memorable moments in the game.
Oh, yeah.
And I was curious why you would remove them.
I'm suggesting just because the whole
the
fear of the injury. And, and those plays are spectacular because they're rare. So, I mean.
Well, I'm thinking of, they are rare. Like, it does seem when you're in the kickoff return team, it's like, go back and then just wait. Hold on to each other's hands like when they treat you. They're coming!
It's like the band playing out the Titanic sinking. Or the Dothraki in that battle in Game of Thrones. I would eliminate the kickoff because they basically already have. I mean, it's all touchbacks anyway. So that's why I feel like, because I'm with you. I mean, Antonio Brown's first game, he scored on a kickoff reverse. And Hank Poteet, Antoine Randall, those were my first favorite. Those were my favorite Steelers. Chidi didn't return any punts, but he was magnificent as well, or kicks. But yeah, it was such an exciting part of the game, but it's gone now already. Right. So just get rid of it, and you might get rid of some commercial breaks. And honestly, those are some things that we know the NFL won't want to look into as far as, we'll voluntarily lose money. I know they said they're actually shortening some of the commercial breaks, but...
Do you like overtime sudden? Would you go to college?
We had a discussion about this. No, I like the current rule. I think the current rule where... basically, if you lose the coin toss, you can hold the other team to the field goal and still get a chance to win. I like that because I feel like the old rule where it was straight sudden death, you lose the coin toss, all they got to do is maybe get like 30 yards and they get to kick a field goal and they win. That's kind of crappy. But this way, it's like I think that if you just give both teams an opportunity to score on offense, then defense is pointless at this point. Shouldn't your defense mean something? Or are we just going to come out here and admit that it really is just bad offense? We've changed all the rules to make it easier.
Might as well. It's funny. We talk about the controversy stemming from the NFC Championship, and yet what's getting swept under the rug is that, hey, in the AFC Championship, everyone knew that whoever won that coin toss was going to win the game.
Right.
And who won the coin toss? The Patriots. If the Chiefs had won, they're winning the game.
Yeah.
So, you already are stripping the defense of any – of what – you know, you're stripping the – like meat from the defense. So.
I like it that you're giving the defense a handicap. I'm not asking you to stop them, you know? You can still give up, 99 yards or whatever and still get the ball back.
I guess.
You know what I mean?
Unless Pete Carroll is your head coach, if you get to the 1 yard line, you're probably going to score.
Right, but what if you don't? You never know.
Yeah.
So I just got the signal from
the chef?
Your mom. We got to wrap it up. We're going on 53.
Yeah.
Nothing to be sorry about. This was great. So we're going to move here, right?
My book that I brought for the week is called The Last Headbangers by Kevin Cook, published in 2012. And on the front cover is the Steelers-Oakland playoff game of 1972. And by the way, get this book and look at this picture. These men are playing on spray-painted asphalt. When you think about who's getting hurt, these men were playing on concrete. But I just want to leave you with a quote from this book. It's the 1972 divisional playoff with the Steelers playing the Raiders. Linebacker Phil Villapiano couldn't get his helmet to fit tightly enough. He took a breath, then reared back, and smacked his forehead into the cement block wall. Bam. Bam, bam. Now we pause as if waiting for the wall to crumble. But that wasn't it. He was waiting for something else. A moment later, Villapiano pulled his helmet back on. There. Better. Knocking his forehead against the wall had made his head swell just a little. And now the helmet fit.
Can't argue with the results, but the methodology.
I certainly think maybe the CTE could be coming from something else.
Hey, so
maybe these aren't the smartest people in the world.
Are these the guys they're testing?
This has been a blast for us. We'd love to hear from you guys. We put a lot of things out there, so please communicate with us. Check us out at Instagram at Steelers Outpost. By the way, Nick and I are here all week. We have a few things planned for Instagram, so stay tuned there. Hit us up on Twitter at Steelers Outpost. Leave us a note on the website, SteelersOutpost.com, or shoot us an old-fashioned email at SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. Until next week, thanks for listening. Go Steelers.
Thanks for being here, Pete Butch.
Anytime. Go Steelman.
Go Steelman.
Always a pleasure, gents.
Okay, bye-bye.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.